realizing over time that God had personalized a way for me to connect with him. God was like, hey, you like dragons? I like dragons too. Let me talk to you about dragons and use dragons here. That really opened my eyes looking back. Oftentimes along the journey, you get surprised that, oh, God was there the whole time, reaching me personally.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Imagine you go to church each week, but on a certain Sunday, the organ is only playing at full volume, as loud as it possibly could be. Would that affect your experience there? And what if, in addition to this blaring organ, other people came and sat down way too close to you, even touching you? And they made irritating noises the whole time and wore super strong cologne or perfume. Would it be hard for you to have a good experience there week after week? Would you keep going to church? I never knew that something like that was the experience of some of my fellow congregants who have extreme sensitivity to different stimuli. I thought we were all having the same experience, but we are not. Today we have another episode in our mini-series on spirituality and neurodivergency. This time, Jared Stewart will share with us some ways we can make church a better experience for people with different types of autism. Even they are not having the same experience as each other. It's all very personal, but luckily, God is very personal too. Jared Stewart has worked with neurodivergent adolescents and adults as a teacher, a life coach, and a licensed behavior analyst, and presented on the techniques and mindsets that lead to improved outcomes for these individuals with audiences in over 18 countries. His passion for the subject arises from personal experience. He was diagnosed with autism himself as an adult.
If you're looking specifically at autism as a neurodivergence, there's basically five primary characteristics that make the concept of autism or the spectrum. And as a spectrum, you're going to get all kinds of degrees and everyone's going to have a very specific flavor. But everyone's going to be dealing with basically five deficit areas. And those are verbal communication, nonverbal communication, sensory, areas of rigidity, and then areas of intense focus and special interest. And it's going to look different for each one. And it's better to think of it that way. A lot of people think of an autism spectrum as this straight line between low functioning and high functioning. And it's just much better to think of it as something where everyone's autism is going to look and sound and feel a little different than the next person's.
So are there a lot of people you think who are undiagnosed?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the idea of autism applying to someone like me who didn't have a speech delay. In fact, I talked early and I kind of haven't shut up since. And so like that the idea of someone like me having autism, it wasn't even in the DSM, the diagnostic manual, until after I was already out of high school. And I actually got a summer job at Scenic View Academy 22 years ago. And one of the first days I was there, I sat down with a student I was supposed to be tutoring. And I said, what are we doing? He's like, well, we're practicing reading. I said, okay, so what are we reading? And he said, The Oasis Guide to Asperger's Syndrome. I'm like, to what now? And I'm looking at this, and as we're going through this book, I was like, oh my gosh, when we're done, can I borrow this book? Because I'm all of a sudden seeing myself in a diagnosis I'd never, ever thought of. I'd always known I was very different, but certainly had no word for it. And then later on, my youngest brother got diagnosed with autism. My son got diagnosed with autism. The estimates vary. But the current rates of autism in the United States are 1 in 36, according to the CDC, and it's probably much, much higher than that. So it's around 2% of people they're looking at, or 2 or 3%, and it's probably, I would say, comfortably double that. So around 5% are probably somewhere on the autism spectrum.
Well, I'd like to focus on two areas in our discussion. One is a personal spiritual life. Has neurodivergence impacted your own faith journey?
Well, of course it has, Steve. I mean, everyone's personal faith journey is unique and to some degree private and very personal. But I would venture to say the majority of those who are neurodivergent are not part of any organized religious community. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But I have five siblings, all of us neurodivergent. But of those five, I was the only one who stayed with our religious congregation, which was the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And it's interesting. People come to religion from different ways, right? And mm-hmm. so some people come at it from the social dimension. Other people come at their faith journey from an emotional standpoint. Some people come at it from this external environmental area. And other people come at it mentally. Autism tends toward very logical, very black and white thinking. And so for myself, it was definitely that mental path in. It was thinking my way into religion, if you will. And so that's, I think, different than most people. And so when I'm going to church, even now, I'm coming at it very intellectually. And I have to be very aware that that's what I'm doing because there's so much more than intellectual that's a part of religion. But I think that creates a barrier for some people on the autism spectrum where they're just intellectually not able to wrap their mind around religion, or nobody makes an intellectual approach to them or an intellectual case for faith to them. And so for me, that was it. I was coming at it not socially, because autism struggles with other people a lot. And so being around other people is often uncomfortable because of sensory issues or because of communication differences, perception differences. And just being around people when you're on the autism spectrum is exhausting. And so the idea of like, yes, I want to spend hours and hours a week with these other people wearing uncomfortable clothing and having to sit very still and having to
maybe sing loud music.
Well, yes, exactly. Although the singing actually was very appealing to me. A lot of people on the spectrum are incredibly talented with music and very attracted to that. And this total aside, but I sit on an advisory board for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on religion, and we had a great opportunity to talk with a group of autistic adults about the hymnal and the changes that are coming up to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and their music, and the passion that these autistic adults had for that music and how that music is often the core of their religious experience, right? I mean, so there's another way people come into religion is through that music. It's probably one of those externals. But as a kid, I connected with that. I loved singing the songs. I loved memorizing all the songs. I was in the choir. In fact, I was part of the very first choir in the state of Alaska that sang Your Mother's Song, the Armies of Helaman. And I was part of that very first primary group to ever go tour and sing that. And it was as a children's choir. So that was a really potent and powerful piece of it for me. It was coming at it through the lyrics to the songs or to the words of the scriptures and to the ideas that were there, the stories of the early church members and those kinds of things. The intellectual side of that was very appealing to me, being able to logically make sense of why am I here? And what would I, you know, what's the purpose of being here? Where did I come from? What am I supposed to do to live a good life? And what happens after we die? Like, those questions were so much more powerful for me than these other experiences.
It's interesting that we might tend to go to a church service and assume that everybody is having the same experience that we are, but we are not all. And no. This may have nothing to do with being on a spectrum, just that we each are having our own life experience and interacting with the service in our own way.
And I think that's one of the most powerful things I think you've hit on right there. As we come together in these congregations and we are open to people who are differently wired, it really helps us all understand that, yeah, each one of us is having a unique personal experience with this religion, and that's part of the power and the beauty of faith.
So for the first half of my life, when I heard people share spiritual experiences in church, like how their prayer had been answered before they even got up off their knees, I would think to myself, well, that's never happened to me, so what's wrong with me? It was only after I started to recognize how God was guiding or speaking to me in unique ways that I stopped feeling left out or maybe even jealous of other people's spiritual experiences, and was able to be happy for them and also be content that God was reaching out to me in the way God knew was best for me, tailored to my own spiritual nature. Are there ways that for you or for people that you work with on a daily basis that they actually might see this as a spiritual gift?
Absolutely, right? I mean, I think anyone who has any kind of difference, at first you're just, oh, God, I wish I wasn't different. You know, what does this mean? What are the challenges? Why does it got to be this hard? But over time, and they find this in the studies, actually, I can point you to the academic studies that'll show it, but over time, the person says, okay, I've got it, you know, for better or worse. And then over time, the person says, you know, I've got this, but this is just part of me, not all of me. And then eventually they're like, you know, this is part of me, and I'm glad that it's part of me. And that's the place I've reached with my own autism is that, and that's what I try to tell audiences, is just it gets better, and you really get to a point where you're like, you know, as hard as it's been, and in some ways it's made the journey extra difficult, I wouldn't trade it for the world, and I wouldn't want a different brain to look at all these things through and or to perceive these things through. And I like who I'm becoming, and autism's a big piece of that. So, yeah, I really do think it can be seen as a gift, and I think congregations that kind of reactively or instinctively cut themselves off from members who are wired differently or who act differently or who come at religion differently or who don't practice it the same as everyone else, those congregations are really, I think, not only missing on what Christ means by unity, but I think they're also missing out on an amazing opportunity for them to enrich their own lives by broadening their experience with others who have a different take and perception and experience of this.
So I know in a lot of ways you would be working on academic subjects with people at the CineView Academy, but in counseling with people and working with people and just general life observation, it seems like you would see a variety of people's faith experience. Now, you started off by saying you would guess that the majority of people are not involved in organized religion, and I am interested in knowing why you think that would be so.
Conversations with parents, conversations with individuals, many of them believing. Again, autism tends toward all or nothing thinking. So many of them have just decided to be atheist or agnostic and just like, it's just easier to just cut that off completely.
Rather than be uncertain.
Yeah, rather than be uncertain. So I'll just be an atheist. But the other side, they're very believing, but then they can't find a way to fit their beliefs, their practice, and the way that they worship even in with existing communities. Like you said, communities, worlds, they're built for the majority and with the majority in mind. And that's not oppression. That's just reality and the fact that there's a scarcity of resources. We're going to build things for the majority. But it doesn't make people who fall outside that majority wrong, right? I mean, the world is not built for short people, and it's not built for really tall people. They have a lot of inconveniences, but it doesn't make them wrong to be short or tall. And we don't talk about curing tall people or curing short people. You know, we're putting them up on stilts to make them do all the things. But we do sometimes talk that way about neurodivergence, that they should just somehow fit into this box we've created that we've called religion. And that does a disservice, I think, to the very concept of religion and faith, but also a disservice to these communities and to these congregations that, again, can be so much richer to include more people and to build worship opportunities that will work for everybody or work for as many people as they possibly can. I think that's probably part of the reason there. But people with autism coming to church, it often starts when they're young, right? When they're a kid, and now you've seen the families where the parents, obviously, something's going on. There's extra levels of the child is really emotional. They may be throwing fits or tantrums. They're screaming. There's noises that maybe we don't expect those noises here in our congregation and in our chapel, you know. There may be sensory needs. There may be non-speaking. Things like that that just really automatically brand that family and that child as like, why are you here and you don't fit in and you're interrupting or disturbing my worship service? And now, again, to some degree, that's legitimate because like we said, everybody's experience is unique.
Or the attitude person, like, I'm controlling my children, why can't...
And that all the time. And how many times are you going to come to a congregation where, every week you feel like, oh, everybody's looking at us, everybody's judging, I'm getting in the way, I'm making noise, we have to go out to the foyer and listen that way, or we're just interrupting, or autism, again, often there's a sensory thing. I mean, my own son with autism, his biggest struggle with going to church as a child was, I mean, we every single week we would try and like hold him down and like, we're going to get you dressed for church. And he did not want to go. And we were like, well, what is it? Why is he not wanting to go to church? And once he got there, he seemed to have an okay time. And the kids were nice to him when he was a kid. And we were watching all that stuff. And afterwards, he'd be like, yeah, it was okay. But one day he was sitting there and we had all of the fidgets and we had all of the things you could do to try and keep you quiet during church. And he was drawing in a notebook and it looked like he was drawing Pac-Man chasing the stick figure. And I'm like, well, what's this? And he said, oh, that's me and I'm being chased by a collar. I'm like, a what? A collar? And turns out wearing a shirt and tie, which was never a sensory issue for me, was just absolute torture for him to have this stiff collar on his neck. Mm. And so we took him down to the fabric store. We had him touch all these different fabrics and find one we could sew in. And he didn't have any problem wearing a white shirt after that. But we didn't know. And so you don't realize, even if your heart goes out to them, it's, what do I do? How do I help? What can I even do? And I think families who feel like we can only make it a few minutes into the meeting and then we have to leave. And then people are going to judge us, or they're going to count us as like not participating in our community, whether that's through an activity or whatever. And when we make our world, when we start from this assumption that's so narrow of what worship looks like and church looks like, we're not realizing that we're building a place that so many people are not going to be able to fit in with or ever want to come back to, and how many people we're excluding by building the world so small.
If I could ask for three things that people in a congregation could do that would be helpful.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Boy, if I only had to pick three, I mean, there are hundreds, well, literally.
Could do four, five.
But let me just throw out a few. I have a chance to work with, like I said, the advisory board for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on disability. I'm not permitted to speak for the church itself, and my opinions represent my opinions, not anyone else's. And I can't talk about all the things we're working on, but I can tell you some of the things that have been decided and some of the things that have been changed. And so let me just lay some of those out, because I think they're exciting. We are looking at creating a library of visual icons that anybody will be able to reference regardless of their speaking and ability level. These visual icons can be used throughout so that regardless of comprehension level, people can understand more of the concepts being taught and visually recognize pages and ideas and even things like hymnals. We are looking at handouts, kind of one-page sheets that can go to provide basic training for all members that says, here's a member with autism and here are some things to keep in mind as you try to communicate with them and include them in your worship services. Here's a one sheet for someone with ADHD or who is deaf, or someone who is visually impaired, someone who has an anxiety disorder or a processing disability. And so these things are coming out and will be coming out very soon, and those will be a great help. But I think the number one is that we've got to change this culture, this idea, right? So my own faith as a Christian, right? You look at Jesus Christ. He spent his entire ministry around people who were different. He purposely went and sought out all of those who were not the norm, who were not the average, and he wanted to bring them in as well and help others see that this is also a child of God. And Christianity is based on this idea that Christ loves us and accepts us, and he died for us, even though we were completely unworthy of that, right? And so this idea then that people who have neurodiversities, you know, they're really different, should be the last thing from the mind of any Christian as we're looking at trying to build congregations of unity, and as we're looking to see how can I bring these people in. If Christ accepted us and loved us when we were completely unacceptable and unlovable, then how can we start judging others and saying, well, this person, I can't really accept them into my worship community. And what we find over and over again is these aren't problems with church doctrine. And I think that's true of most religions. I think most religions are about love and acceptance and how to help people live their best lives and become their best selves. So that's not the problem. The problem is the culture that grows up around it. Oh, this is the way to become your best self. This is the one path, right? So that people begin to think that unity means we all have to look the same. We all have to sound the same. Yeah. We all have to act the same. When, of course, that's a ridiculous definition of unity. Unity is based more on a commonality of purpose. And
yeah, we mistake uniformity for unity.
I love that. Yes, we absolutely do. And as long as the culture mistakes uniformity for unity, we're not going to get to true unity or true belonging. And so being able to help change that culture. And culture is about story, right? It's the stories that are told over and over and repeated. So telling a different story, a story of how to help people who didn't feel a part of something be part of something. Telling a story of how flexible we could be with this activity or this idea. Again, as an autistic person, socializing can be just misery for me. So this idea of like, oh, hey, we're going to have an activity and everybody's going to socialize is not appealing at all to me. I have to like, again, come through all my intellectual reasons and my own intellectual faith to be like, okay, I think I can probably make the word karaoke party work for me and drag myself through that, or the barbecue or the camp out or whatever it happens to be. And yet as people can get more flexible and be like, hey, we did this really interesting thing with a ward, or we tried to do things that were more broadly appealing, or we went and talked to these families and to these individuals. We know who in our ward is neurodivergent, who in our congregation has a differently wired brain. How do we reach out to them? What are their needs? What would they like to do? Talk to the parents and be like, what does your child need? What is your dream and your vision for their faith journey? And how can we help them? And we're looking at additional things there. And when I say
I'm still wanting you to work on the collar myself for all of us.
Right. But again, this expectation of how people need to look while they're worshiping, how they need to sound while they're worshiping, how we need to touch while we're worshiping. All of these things are often very cultural and could be very much changed and changed for the better.
I quite value your opinion because of your experience. But can you tell me about people who learned to experience God? Like they didn't make that connection, but somehow they learned to, and what helped them turn the corner?
Wow, that is a powerful question. And I think that question gets right to the heart of faith is how is this person experiencing God?
Mm-hmm.
As I said, when I was younger, for me, I grew up on an island in Alaska. And so it was, you know, there weren't a lot of members of my faith there at all. We were a very small minority.
More bears than people.
Much more bears than people. My personal experience with God, as I said, started with the music and listening to that music, but then not realizing the emotional side or the social side of that, like I said, it took me time to come in intellectually. I was a typical autistic kid. I was really hyper fixated on fantasy, and I loved Star Wars, and I loved Lord of the Rings, and I loved those kind of things. And one day I came across a book that had a verse by Isaiah in the beginning, talking about dragons. Hmm. And I was like, wait a minute, there's no dragons in the Bible. That's not a thing. I've never, my Sunday school teachers have never mentioned dragons ever, but I really like dragons, right? As a kid. And so for me, there was no internet or anything back then. So I went through the book. I literally read the Bible just to underline anywhere it said dragon. That was my first experience with scripture.
Do you have to wait all the way till the book of Revelation after you get through?
No, you'd be shocked how many times dragons come up in the Old Testament. And I started with Isaiah because I knew there had to be a quote in there somewhere. So I read Isaiah. It was the first book I ever read. Made no sense to me, but I underlined anything that had to do with dragons. And then I also found it mentioned like unicorns and it mentioned satyrs and stuff in there. And I was like, well, this is kind of cool. And that's got to be metaphorical, right? You know? But I, again, realizing over time that God had personalized a way for me to connect with him. God was like, hey, you like dragons? I like dragons too. Let me talk to you about dragons and use the dragons here and realizing that, wait, the dragon here he's talking about is a symbol for the creation, or it's a symbol for evil, or it's a symbol for the Christ. You'd be shocked how often dragons are a symbol of Christ. That really opened my eyes looking back, right? So
yeah.
Oftentimes along the journey, you get surprised that, oh, God was there the whole time reaching me personally and touching me personally. And I think every autistic person comes at it very differently.
Well, your sense of mission is pretty easy to sense. One of my questions is, what brings you the most joy in your faith, but also in this life mission?
Well, I think that what brings me the most joy is related to my faith. My faith teaches that the glory of God is intelligence, that the glory of God is light and truth, that God's mission is to bring to pass the immortality and eternal life of man. Or in other words, that Jesus is there for us to progress and progress eternally and to become our best selves. And so if everything I get to do in my life is about helping other people wherever they are, starting where they are, loving them before they're lovable, and then building and helping them build a life that is the very best life they can have. If we could maximize people, if we could say, let's accept this person for where they are and where do they want to go? And let's get them as far along that path as they can. Let's help them have the tools and the opportunities to be able to maximize their life and their life experience. That's what we all want, right? And that's what God as our parent wants. He wants us to be the best version of ourselves we can be. And if we can dedicate our lives to helping others become the best versions of themselves, I really do feel a resonance, a harmony there with God and with God's mission and with Christ and with his sacrifice and his grace that is, again, the most powerful source of joy.
And can help each of us, I think, who maybe aren't on that spectrum, as we give up what we expect might be, this meeting should be totally carefree and easy. There should be nothing demanded of me, that we can give up a little of our comfort in our effort to create that space for everybody.
Yeah. Could you imagine, I mean, one of the cool things about the pandemic, for instance, is just how much freedom was created by starting to put worship services online so that people could virtually join a stream and watch mm-hmm. their local congregation and not have to get up and put on uncomfortable clothing or sit right next to somebody that maybe they don't want to sit next to or smell people's perfume that might be overwhelming to them. And now I could just, they can participate and just focus on that participation virtually. And so when the pandemic was over and congregations were like, well, we need to bring people back together. We need to stop doing these virtual streams. We made very sure very quickly that the general authorities came and said, hey, actually keep those up and running. Because for so many reasons, not just neurodivergence. And if we can, like you said, get out of our comfort zone and stop looking at worship through this one lens of like, well, this is how it's always been. We can find ways to broaden who we can bring in and who can be a part of these amazing benefits of being part of a faith community, being part of a worship community. I love how you said it's not about uniformity. Unity is much more than that. If we can create places where people can feel united in their differences, what an amazing and empowering world that will be.
Many thanks to Jared Stewart for speaking with me about autism and spirituality. Next week, we hear from three guests who shared their personal stories about developing a relationship with God while also working through their needs as autistic people. This episode was produced by Aaliyah Ebert. Our production team includes Heather Bigley, Katarina Martinich, Soraya Pearson, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production team includes DJ Cromarty, Gracie Davis, and Mark Hansen. Spread the word about In Good Faith by leaving a comment and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. We think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Our YouTube page is youtube.com/in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join us again soon, right here, In Good Faith. If you're like me, you want to stay informed, even about some of the tough topics that have to be discussed. But so much of the discussion just really doesn't move anything forward or generate light as much as heat. That's where Top of Mind comes in, a BYU original podcast. They understand how polarizing those kind of conversations can be, and they want to help us engage in that challenge while actually learning something. Their goal is developing empathy for others. Top of Mind can help you clarify your own views, become an effective advocate for the things you care about, and even challenge your way of thinking so you can become a better citizen, a kinder neighbor. Listen to Top of Mind now on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.